Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And I got to tell you, my guest today, I was out drinking, you know, people, you know, and I've cut my drinking down. We were talking about it in the first hour because, you know, from the heart problems and just, as I said, now I have a beautiful girlfriend, my lovely Joanne, and so I'm not miserable. And that's basically, I'm not going out drinking and bitching at everything. And my career is going good. But I was out drinking during the football games, and I was giving my guest friend a hard time. I was sitting there next to him, and I kept saying, "I look like Don Cheadle." So we started talking, and then his friend came in, Gino, is my guest today, and as we were talking, I just thought they were two nice guys. It turns out Gino's on a TV show, he's an actor, and you know me, the guest whore, I'm like, well, hey, I gotta get you on Cooper Talk. And what's funny is, this is so funny, because occasionally, like, someone will bring me, like, a videotape of their things, but I had to ask him for a picture, because my girlfriend's niece loves the show, and it's the only time I've ever done that was her. See, I'm, like, cool, like, I'm like, the cool, like, aunt's boyfriend, because I'm getting her this, and then her nephew loves the show Big Time Rush, and it turns out that one of my friends is a producer for that, so I got to get him a autographed picture of the group and a t-shirt they have on set, so I'm scoring points, so, you know, I'm going to be getting a little, that's all I'm saying. But anyway, we have my guest, Gino. How you doing, Gino?
How you doing, big guy?
Gino Seegers, and Glenn Farrington, the past Cooper Talk guest, said, you have the deepest, now I got to ask you, now, has your voice always been deep? Well, how old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah.
I'm 46.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You look much younger, because I'm 48. You look much younger.
Yeah, I get that a lot. It's kind of confusing for a lot of people. They think that I'm a little bit younger, and even casting directors think
your
that
your face
I'm,
looks very young.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a job, you know, Steve. I mean, I don't really work. I just basically do a hobby that they pay me to do.
Right.
So, and I played sports, you know, internationally all of my life, so it's really not been a situation where I've been pressured to meet deadlines. You know, things were serious in the circular world for people who are working in sales and that sort. So I didn't really, you know, I didn't really age with that sort of stress on my back. So, I mean, really playing and having fun.
It's also genetics. I mean, are your parents older looking?
No. My father, who's deceased, was relatively youthful. My mother was mistaken for my girlfriend right up until I was 30, you know, so.
That's funny, because my father just passed recently. I mean, that was 88, but he still, he had colon cancer, he had a quadruple bypass, he had a stroke. How'd he die? He slipped and fell and hit his head.
Wow.
But the thing is, the guy's 88, he had more hair than me, and I'm like, yeah. You know, you've been through all this stuff.
Yeah.
But so it's in the genes. I didn't know you were 46.
Yeah,
so 46. Was your voice ever high? Born into puberty?
I don't remember, but I do remember the day that it was different.
Okay.
I do remember the week that went by. I was a little kid. Growing up in the South, you know, mothers are very...
Now, where are you from?
I'm from North Carolina.
Okay.
Growing up in the South, mothers are very, very animate about eating breakfast, especially in my household. It was very important to have breakfast. Now, you're either going to have a cold cereal or a hot cereal. So, every morning, my mother would ask me, "What you want for breakfast, baby?" And I would say what I wanted, you know. And one morning she says, "What you want for breakfast, baby?" I said, couldn't talk, couldn't get a word out. She says, "Ooh, I'm going to have to make you some oatmeal." So she made me some oatmeal, and I ate it, and it was good. You know, the next morning comes, and she says, "What do you want for breakfast, baby?" I said, I'm going to have to really get you some oatmeal now. I'm going to put a little cinnamon in it, baby. So she put a little cinnamon in it. It was great, you know.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
Great. And, you know, next couple of mornings, oatmeal. So she's thinking oatmeal is good for my throat. Well, I'm getting tired of this oatmeal, right?
Right, right, right.
And so one morning I woke up and she said, "What do you want for breakfast, baby?" And I said, "Fruit, fruit, Fruit Loops." And that was it. And she thought, "Oh my God, are you sure you want Fruit Loops? I'm going to get you some kind of cough medicine or something."
That's funny.
And literally at 12, here I am talking with this round bass bafasso voice, and it is embarrassing because there are no 12-year-olds that talk like me.
Okay.
And I instantly overnight became Froggy. I instantly overnight became Darth Vader. I became, every deep voice spoof you can imagine.
But were you big then?
I was a little guy.
Okay, because then if you're big, you can kick all the asses.
Yeah, no.
Darth Vader, this bitch.
Yeah, no, I would have been, man, 5'3".
Okay.
5'2". But for a 12-year-old, I don't know, is that pretty big for a 12-year-old? I mean, when I was 12, I was... probably the short, one of the shorter kids, one of the shorter guys in my class.
I'm not sure. When I was 12, I was very ripped. I could bench like 40 pounds, and I weighed like 38.
Oh, that's pretty good.
No, I don't. But no, I don't know. It's like, because it's so funny, because my girlfriend's nephew, I swear to God, in a year, she sent a picture of him and her on Thanksgiving. He's probably 13 or 14. She's 5'3". He was taller than her. Now he's 5'10".
Yeah.
It grew in a year. So I guess that's small. So now you said sports. Now, first of all, what made you get into acting, or did you do sports first? What is your background in your final path to getting to acting now and getting a TV show? Did you want to act as a kid, or were you athletically very inclined as a kid?
You know, I never thought of myself as a performer.
Okay.
I never thought of myself as an entertainer. I never thought of myself as anything other than someone that was doing what they enjoyed to do and was relentless in pursuing what they wanted to do. And at that time, I wanted to be an athlete. Now, I come from a background of, basically a broken home.
Okay.
My mother raised me, but I had a relationship with my father that was unparalleled to those even that were at home with their kids, who were just working all the time. My dad and I spent endless weekends together, every single weekend since I can remember.
Okay.
And so I had a really good strong relationship and a father figure in my life. So it was kind of a broken...
Now, was he athletic?
No, he wasn't athletic at all, and he never encouraged me to play sport. The reason I played sport was because I, for lack of a better term, I had a Napoleonic complex. It sounds crazy, but I really felt like I wasn't good enough. I really felt like I wasn't, big enough, strong enough, and I had to prove that to someone. I had to prove that I could do it. I had to prove that I was good. I had to prove that I was better. And... I had this burning desire to show everybody that I could do it. And even though when I look back, and think of the things my self-evaluation of me, that I was too small, that I was too slow, that I was too weak, that I was, all these things that I wasn't. And I look back and I realize that I really wasn't the smallest guy. I really wasn't the weakest guy. I really wasn't the slowest guy.
Okay.
And I really wasn't the least athletic guy. But that desire made me, an all-state football player, a two-time state champion wrestler. Even after winning the state championship, I thought that I wasn't good enough.
You played football and you wrestled?
I played football and I wrestled.
Did you do a spring sport? Did you do track?
I didn't do track. I just really trained for football and wrestling.
And what position were you?
I was a defensive lineman and an offense and defensive line.
Okay, so now you go to high school and you're in sports, and your team's good. Now are you like all state?
I was all state wrestler, 2-time state champion. I only wrestled 2 years in the state championship. I hurt my knee my junior year in high school, so I wasn't able to continue that year.
You were a freshman and sophomore when you won the state championship?
No. Freshman and sophomore in North Carolina did. A citywide school system.
Okay.
It didn't do statewide.
Okay.
So the only time you got a chance to wrestle for the state was the 11th and 12th grade. So I only had 2 shots at it.
Okay.
And I had something to prove. And because I wasn't the strongest, I wasn't the fastest,
right.
I wasn't the quickest, I wasn't the biggest, I wasn't anything, So I really had to, I had this Napoleonic complex. I was this huge kid,
How big were you?
I was I would have been maybe 6'3 at that time, 205 pounds. Which is a big guy, but I wasn't fat. I was a big guy, but I wasn't a chubby guy.
Yeah, it's so weird, like linemen now. I look at the Des Washington, they're so fat. They're giant, but they're just like these huge guys.
But at the same time, though, Steve, when you go up and you shake hands with them guys, you realize, okay, he's not really fat.
Oh, I know. It's all strong.
He's got there's a lot of steak in there, baby.
So you went, and now did you go to college?
I got a full grant and aid to Western Carolina University, home of the Catamounts.
For football, did you play?
Now, I had lots of offers to wrestle, but I had decided that my best way out of my situation or out of my economical situation was to play football.
Okay.
And I was hoping that I would be able to get a degree in something that I could do a job. Professional sports was just not on the table for me.
Okay.
I just didn't think that I was big enough, strong enough. Again,
okay,
going to Western Carolina, having something to prove, earn a starting position with the Catamounts. I didn't start my freshman year, but I played more than the seniors.
Okay.
I earned a letter my freshman year. Started every year after that. Was an All-American at Western Carolina, and still didn't feel like I was good enough.
Now, at no time during this did you even think about going to acting? That wasn't even your mind.
No, absolutely.
You wanted to get a degree.
Yeah,
you wanted
to get a degree. Okay. Get a job and just be a normal, productive member of society.
Now, what was your major?
My major was industrial engineering.
Okay.
Yeah.
No
theater, no drama, no.
Right, yeah, no, yeah. So you were there for books. Now what happens? Do you graduate college?
I graduated.
Okay,
yes.
Now what happens with your career with football? Anything?
Well, I go to the minor league system because after
explain it to my listeners.
Minor league system in football is something that comes and goes. There are minor league systems that play statewide or tri-statewide. There are national minor league systems that are, okay, more elaborate, but still, they either come and go.
Are you paid for that?
You are paid, okay. But not, you know, not substantially.
Okay.
You have to get a job, you know. And so I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, and played for a system called the minor league football system, the Charlotte Barons.
Okay.
And we played against teams like the teams in Boston. We played teams in California, Colorado.
Now, what
Florida.
Kind of venues did you play? Did you play in bigger, college stadiums?
We played in local college city stadiums. You know,
did
the
people
city
come out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they had people come out. We wouldn't get more than, I don't know, 10,000. You know, maybe anywhere between 5,000 and 10,000.
Okay.
You know. So it wasn't a big thing, but it was decent. We got to fly. We didn't take buses. You know, they provided apartments for us.
Okay.
And it was decent. It was really decent.
So how long did you pay for that?
I did that for 2 years.
And then what happens? Where do you go?
And then I decided that, you know, I needed to, you know, I wasn't finished with my university.
Okay.
So I had to go back to school, went back to school, earned a leadership scholarship there, finished my degree. Then I decided that I was going to go get a job.
So
and in industrial engineering, I was going to give it up and give a job. And then one late night, I had ESPN playing on in the background, and they had this thing called Rugby League, the State of Origin. And that's a competition in Australia where Queensland plays against New South Wales.
Okay.
And I'm looking at these guys playing as I'm filling out my resumes and I'm signing them, and I'm saying, I can do that, you know? And so I signed, they had some tryouts for the American Patriot Rugby League team. I went and tried out, made the team, went to, you know, Canada, went to Australia, went to London, just started traveling around the world playing rugby league.
Now, coming from the background of football, I knew guys were in rugby clubs. I've never met anyone. Is it much more physical than football?
It is a different sport.
Okay.
Need I say, I have never been hit so hard in my life outside of fighting.
Okay, and you're not wearing pads, so.
I've never been hit so hard in my life outside of fighting than when I was playing American football.
Really?
When American football. But I've never been so tired outside of wrestling than when I was playing rugby.
Wow. Okay.
Now, so, and it let's look at it like this. Let's look at the psychology of putting on hats. Okay. When you put on a cowboy hat, you assume a sort of a personality of a cowboy. You know, you won't go around like that. Or you put on a policeman's hat, or you assume a position of authority. And
right.
Your voice drops, and you become authoritative. You know.
Well, when I put on a fez, I become a dork.
Yeah. When you put on a helmet, you literally think that you're indestructible.
That makes sense.
Okay?
That does make sense.
Because as a kid, the first time you put on those pads, you went outside and fall down. Hey, I can't get hurt. And so in your mind, you think you can't be hurt.
Okay.
And you run like you can't be hurt. Whereas if you don't have that helmet on, you know you can get hurt.
Right. So it's
in the back of your mind, you don't really run as hard as you can. Not like they do in football. And they certainly don't use their head as a weapon.
Right.
So my contingent is that if you want to get rid of concussions in the NFL, take away the helmets.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's because you're invincible. Yeah, that helmet. And it's like, and you think, oh, I'm not going to get hurt. And it's just what's amazing. This is amazing. You think how hard people get hit is that with a helmet that's padding, they get concussions. I mean, it's just sick, the force and the, you know.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's no different than whiplash, really.
Right.
So if you take a person in a car who not only has the padding of the car, but the padding of the seat and all of the interstitial air between your body and the inside walls of the car. So when you actually hit something, your head doesn't actually hit anything. It just jerks.
Right.
The actual jerking and the immediate stop is what really harms and concusses you or gives you whiplash or whatever. Imagine the inside walls of that car being attached to your body, and then you get an impact. How much more shock are you going to absorb? It's just like having a helmet on. It's not really protection at all. It's just dispersing the impact over a wider surface.
Right. So how long did you play for the rugby?
I played rugby for about 7 years.
Now, do you have any serious injuries during that?
Not one serious injury. Now, but, so I mean, oddly enough, I never had a serious injury playing football either.
So now the team is based out of the U.S.?
The team was based out of Lake Placid, New York.
Okay, so you moved up there?
No. I basically flew up for competitions, and then we flew out of the country a lot. We flew to Australia to play in the World Sevens Tournament, which is how I got on the team, the Richmond Rovers in New Zealand.
Okay, so from the American team, when did you start playing for the Richmond Rovers?
I started playing probably in 1994.
And that was after how long on the American team?
That was after, well, see, with the American team, it's called international rugby, so you can play in conjunction with playing professionally. So it's like playing for the Olympic team. You know, you're going to play for, LeBron James is not going to quit playing for the Heat.
Right.
Play, you know, he's just going to play the international games while he's playing for the Heat.
So you're playing over there, so then now you moved to New Zealand?
Yes, I moved to New Zealand.
Now, did you like New Zealand?
I love New Zealand.
Okay, now how long did you live there?
I lived in New Zealand. I am currently a resident of New Zealand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm an indefinite resident of New Zealand. I have a residency where I can come and go like a citizen.
So you play there, and now at what point when you read? Okay, so it's your paid gig doing the rugby.
Yeah, it's barter car division, so it pays pretty good, but you still sort of need to, you know, to, if you really want to make some money, you got to figure out other ways, you know. You got to make some really hard and fast decisions.
So what are you doing besides doing rugby when you're over in New Zealand?
I basically worked for a small company called Humes. Okay. Humes Piping Company, and I was using my engineering ability to develop and build piping systems.
All right.
Yeah.
So now, where does the acting come in?
It's like
I understand now. You play in rugby. You play in semi-pro football, whatever, minor leagues. Then you play in the U.S. Then you live in New Zealand.
Well, I mean, there are a few other sports that came minority sports that came into play. Like I was a national champion freestyle wrestler in New Zealand. I also did some full contact wrestling
in New Zealand.
In New Zealand and Thailand. And then I did some, I trained for sumo for a little while. I couldn't get big enough.
Sumo guys are fat.
Yeah, I couldn't get fat enough.
Did you try to get fat?
I tried really
People
hard.
Hate you. Every listener hates you now because there's fat guy on the couch going, I don't even eat, I'm fat. This guy's trying to get fat.
But that's
can't
why
get fat.
He's fat, because he doesn't eat.
That's crazy. Well,
it's crazy. You know how sumo wrestlers train? They eat. You know how many meals a day they eat?
10.
2.
Big meals or small?
2. Very large meals.
Okay.
I mean, they eat till they sweat. That is how much diet. You know, I was eating chickens.
Really?
So the S on the end of that is mini chickens.
So, but wasn't it hard for you? Because you were such an athlete. You were wrestling. Wrestlers were always in good shape.
Yeah.
Wasn't it weird for you to sit there and try to say, okay, first of all, why did you want to do sumo?
I really felt like it was another form of wrestling.
Okay.
And I really felt like I could. I had a real good sense of leverage. And speaking to one of the guys that was a part of New Zealand Sumo, he was very, very instrumental in getting me to come to their gym and train with them. You know, and I was, man, I would have been 280 pounds then, which is I would have been a fly on their back. You know, these guys were the size of Volkswagens. I'm talking about Super Beetles, right? And I couldn't even get my arms around them, you know. And so just training with them and really realizing that, you know, if I really want to, I could do this, you know. But after about a year of trying to get as big as I possibly could and only gaining, you know, 100 pounds, I would have needed another 300 or 400 pounds.
Right, okay.
You know, it's like, you know, I'm tired of eating chickens, man, and eating buckets of rice. I'm just tired.
Yeah, it must just be, tire you out.
It's
exhausting,
man.
Because you think when you have a big meal, you get tired, but when you're eating over, you're in gluttony.
You're eating to the verge of literally almost regurgitating.
Yeah.
You know, and you're having to hold it down. It's just too much.
So you're sitting there and you're doing all different things. And
yeah.
now your career ends in rugby.
My athletic career ends in pretty much, I would say, full contact fighting was my professional career ended because I lost my molar in Thailand and I thought I like my teeth too much to continue this. And so I moved back to New Zealand and started a few small businesses, concreting, window cleaning and security. Then one of my security staff said to me, I have a really cool voice. You know, you should do something with it. Oddly enough, I heard that so many times I was just frustrated to no end. I said, be my manager. You know, it's what I would say a lot of times. And this guy, unbeknownst to me, had a relative in the radio business. He gives his relative a call, and then he gives him my number, and the guy calls me up and says, hey, man, come down and have a read. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, why not? So I go to this radio station, and I'd never been in a radio station before. I'd never heard myself before. I'd never really...
It's weird.
It's strange, you know, and I did a test. He wanted a test, and he told me to come back into the booth, you know, come out of the booth. I went out of the booth, and he played this tape of this guy, right? He played this, this guy's voice was literally filling up this room, and I was like, man, who is that guy? And he started laughing, because that guy was me.
Okay.
And I was like, wait a minute, I sound like that?
Right.
You know, I couldn't believe, you know, I heard every single vibration of my voice, I couldn't believe it. And so he gave me some copy, and I took it into the booth, and of course... he said, have a read, you know, so I read it, and I was like, I can't remember what it was, but let's say for example's sake, it was, if you are tired of partying with the kiddies, come on down to Side Effects on the corner of Wilkes Boulevard and Ashley Road. It was terrible.
Okay.
He says, no, you need to act it. Act like you're talking. Oh, okay. If you are tired of partying with the kiddies, it was terrible, right?
Okay.
So I really liked it so much, and he said, go get some acting classes. And I said, you know what? I don't have time for that. If you teach me how to do it, I'll do them for free. And he's like, whoa. Okay, cool. So the first ad took, man, an hour. The second ad took 30 minutes. The third ad took 15 minutes.
And would it just have a regular copy? Just like, you know, hey, come on down to such and such. Come to Mojito Monday. Don't hate this. You know this much. It's like, come to Mojito Monday.
Yeah.
And there's always that girl, Fantasia.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell? They're the worst commercials, but you have
you
someone has to do them. You need them. Yeah.
You know,
and you remember them.
You remember them. And because of the melody that they're speaking.
It's a cadence.
Exactly.
It's all like, boom.
And it's
come on down. Hey, it's Monday, Monday. There used to be a thing in New Jersey. Sunday. Echo Speedway, Big Daddy Garlitz. And everyone, if you know someone from the South Jersey area, they remember it. Sunday, Big Daddy Garlitz.
But it's exactly right. And so
what was the first one you did?
I can't even remember. But I mean, that turned into, if you're tired of partying with the kiddies, come on down the Side of Excellence. You know, it turned into that.
Okay.
You know, I was able to deliver that. But like, being in South Africa, I could hear guys on the radio, and they had the same thing, but it was just in a different language.
Okay.
You know, it'd be zim. Up on my daughter, you know, it would be like the same thing, you know, boom, shillelagh.
It's
the same thing, you know, it's just a different language, same rhythm, you know. So, after learning to do that, I realized that I really like doing it. And so, when people started calling me in,
you like doing it as the voiceovers,
I like doing the voiceovers. So, when people started calling me in after about, you know, 3-4 months, because I was knocking those things out, you know, in two takes, he was saying, you know, I was saying, hey, look, man. All right, I think I've paid you back now. I mean, you've taught me, I've paid you back. I think we need to go to, you know, you paying for my time a little bit here. So he got me in on this animation pilot, and I did the animation
in New Zealand.
In New Zealand, yeah. And I had to play a cowboy, a broom, you know, it was a cartoon. So I played this little cowboy character. I played a big old burly bus, you know, drives around the world, showing all the little children about different animals.
Now, what was that experience? Because you're sitting there, and when you're doing it, you're not getting any feedback, and you're not, it's not even you, it's your voice. Do you have to imagine you're the bus, or do you just talk? I mean, is it you?
You know, honestly, I just put... I put the picture of the character, you know, on my stand with my copy.
Okay.
And as I'm reading it, I glance over at the bus, and I'm envisioning how this character sounds. For me, it's a process, and I guess everyone has their own way of doing it. But for me, that visualization or that reminder of who I'm playing is very important for
okay.
me. And it works for me. And oddly enough, I've been auditioning like crazy to do characters here in L.A. And it's really a hard nut to crack.
Right. And they always say, the voiceover guys, people, yeah. are always like the people have been in it forever. It's the same voice.
Those guys.
Or they go celebrities.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to be that guy,
right?
You know, I really like to be, you know, appreciated for my ability as opposed to my name. But it you know, it is what it is. And if I can get in as as a celebrity voiceover or a celebrity guest, that would be great too. I wouldn't say no, but I would much rather be appreciated for my vocal quality as opposed to my name.
So you're in New Zealand, and you're doing these commercials.
Yes.
And now you're getting a lot of them.
I'm getting a lot of them.
Now, what's your next process? What happens?
My next process, basically.
You do the show, and the little animated show.
Yeah, I do that. But, of course, it didn't get picked up.
Okay.
But the thing that really blew them back was when I was able to do, I did a cowboy, I did the bus, but it really shocked them when I did the little old lady, and they just, you know, they just lost it when I did the little old lady, and they thought, man, you need an agent.
Okay.
And I was like, where do I sign up? You know, he says, well, go down, look through the phone book, get an agent, man. You got a lot going here, you know. So I get an agent, and, you know, unbeknownst to me, I get a modeling agent. I don't know. Agent's an agent.
I
had no idea, you know. So I get this modeling agent, and she sent me out on these commercials that I think are radio spot commercials. They're actually TV commercials.
Okay.
I don't want to be on camera because I'm you know, I'm this huge guy. I don't want to be on camera, you know. And she's like, no, do it. It's good, you know. And I get these three ads, you know, for on camera. And there's a lot of money in these ads. I had no idea. These were buyouts for like 25 grand.
In New Zealand.
Grand in New Zealand, yeah. And I'm thinking, man, I need to get into this business, you know.
So you booked some of them?
I booked three of them. Okay. I booked three ads for like 25, 30 grand each. And I thought, wow, this is great.
You right, know? Yeah.
And so the girl that basically got me those ads at this talent agency got headhunted to another talent agency, but it was really a parallel sort of move.
Okay.
It was a you know same level move, and she asked me to come over with her. Well, I hadn't signed any contract, but I needed to get my last check, you know. So I go into the agency to get my last check, and the lady says, "Wow, you have a nice voice." You know, the lady that replaced her didn't know me. She said, "You have a nice voice. Do you sing?" I was like, "No, I don't sing." And I don't have any hopes of singing.
Right.
I just want to get my last check and go over to this new agency. And she says, let me send you out on this call because I think that you might have a chance at this. You know, and I thought, you know, I'm really not a singer. I don't read music. I don't.
Right.
You know, I don't want to embarrass myself or you. So why don't I just, you know,
stick like
yeah,
you know,
get some classes.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me get some classes and maybe I'll think about it later. And she said, well, listen, she really convinced me. She said, what better way to find out where you are than to go out and audition?
But that is true.
Hey, you know what? Okay. All right, cool. I'll go and see. But I'm telling you, they're not going to want a bass. You know, I'm thinking they don't want basses, you know? So I go into this audition. And, of course, it's for Disney. and every singer in New Zealand is there, and they got a lot of talented people in New Zealand, man. I mean, for such a small place, it's a focus point for singers, performers, all kinds.
I should go over there, be the voice of I'll be the voice of New Zealand. Hey, it's Cooper Talk, the voice of New Zealand. Monday, come see Gino Sager and me at Fantasia.
You might do well, man. You might. You never know. So Kiwis will embrace you. I think.
So you go.
I go there. And the.
Are you a little scared now because you don't sing? I mean, I just said you probably see all these people who, and I can imagine it's bad enough when you go to auditions for an actor. I can imagine just the singers are probably just such flamboyant douchebags.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, man. They had ascots. They had sheet music.
A bunch of Rick Astley.
These guys, man, were walking around doing things I'd never heard before. And they were doing things with their voice. I thought, what is wrong? I'm in the wrong place.
Right, what am I doing?
They were women. They were...
off the shower. All a bunch of pretentious jerks.
I was doing all this stuff, man. I'm thinking, man, I'm really in the wrong place.
Yeah,
because I don't know what he's doing, but everybody's doing that. I must be...
What the hell is
going on, right? And so, after having a small discussion with the lady up front about why I was there, you know, there was the audition room on one side and the... practice room on the other.
Okay.
So I go in and the first guy goes in. There's like seven or eight of them, right? The first guy goes in and comes out. I thought he forgot something, man. That was it. That was his audition. I was like, God.
Quick, yeah. It's because they don't like it, you're out.
Yeah, boom, boom, like that. Boom, boom. So the other guy went in, bang, bang, he out. Me being the athlete, you know, so I start timing. I'm thinking that, you know, one day, if I can beat 45 seconds, I'm going to tell my kids how well I did at that audition, you know. And they were just coming out like 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 5 seconds, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. Guy came out one time, the door didn't stop moving. It was crazy. It was crazy. I go into the audition. I time myself. I put my watch back. I say, hey, my name is Gino. I'm here for the audition. And the guy says,
well, hello. That doesn't sound like a New Zealand accent. Where are you from?
I say, well, I'm from North Carolina.
Whatever brought you to New Zealand?
I say, I came to New Zealand. Man, that's 20 seconds. If I stretch this ass out, I'm going to win. You know? Yeah. I'm going to stretch this ass out, you know? So I came to New Zealand in 1990. Was it 90? April 93? I'm stretching it out, right? Trying to win this bet in my mind, you know? And I'm talking to him, and it's like, so what brought you guys to New Zealand?
Well, we're auditioning for The Lion King, and we think that possibly we might find some talent here. Have you selected a song for us?
I was like, at that point, I'm thinking, well, no. In my head, I'm thinking, no. And of course, I'm saying, oh, yeah, sure, I got a song. I got a song. Had no song, man. Had no song.
You weren't even a singer.
Wasn't a singer, right? But I mean, I would sing in the shower.
But you never thought, you're doing these voices, you don't think, I can't sing. So yeah, it's not even a thing. But this.
Then I thought, okay, well, I'll sing a bit of, you know, a bit of Jelly Roll, or I could sing that. Or I could sing some, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. I could sing something like that. I'll just do Jelly Roll. It's pretty standard, you know. It's a blues standard, blues jazz standard. And so I said, okay. And so I started singing. I got out like two or three bars. He said, stop. I said, woo, 2 minutes, man. I'm the man, you know?
Right.
And he says,
I was wondering if you could work on something from the show.
I'm like, yeah, I could try.
Well, I was noticing you looking at your watch. I thought maybe you were running out of time.
I said, no, I'm good. So he gives me the music, and he gives the accompanist the piano music. And I'm thinking, I say to the accompanist, I'm saying,
I don't know the song.
Ma'am, I really don't. You can't read music, can you? I was like, no, ma'am, I can't. And she says, it's okay, I'm going to play your melody. Now, again, I had no idea what that meant. So she plays this melody, and I say, and she said, this is the part you are going to sing, she says. I say, dung, 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 dung. I said, okay. So she plays, and she marks me when to sing, and I sing that very notes that she gave me. Night and the spirit of life calling Mamilla. And I didn't know that I had an ear for music. I had no idea.
Okay, all right.
So there was some very natural things going on that I didn't realize I could do, right? And so we go through the first page, and we sing it and sing it and sing it. And she asked me...
This is still in the audition. You're still in. It's got to be about 10 minutes by, at least 10, 15, 20 minutes now by now.
No, dude. We sang that number, and I'm in there, And they give me the sheet music, they give me a CD, and they say, go away and learn this and come back and sing us the whole song. I said, what time tomorrow you want me to come? He said, no, we want you to come back today. I'm like, okay, no problem.
Okay.
So I'm walking down the stairs, and my watch is still running. I'm in there for 45 minutes. I'm thinking to myself, man, I blew those guys away.
Right.
You know, I'm gonna tell my kids how well I did at this audition, you know? Unbeknownst, again, to me, I had no idea. And they, I came back another 45 minutes later. They're telling me they believe I embodied the character, and they want to offer me the job in the ensemble, but they want me to continue auditioning for Mufasa.
Okay.
And at that time, I was really gobsmacked because I had three businesses, and I really didn't want a job leaving New Zealand.
Right.
I wanted a job in New Zealand. I didn't have any intentions of leaving the country, so the job was in Australia. And I said I needed to think about it.
How far is that from?
It's a three and a half hour flight. And I said I needed to think about it because I have three businesses to sell and I need to pack up. And it's a lot. You know, it's a lot. And so, long story short, I pack up. I go to Australia as an ensemble member understudying the role of Mufasa. When the show went to Melbourne, Australia, there was an issue with the current Mufasa going to Melbourne.
What was the issue?
Issue is he didn't want to go.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, the issue, he didn't want to go, and they were going to offer, and since I was the second understudy, I figured that they were going to offer the first understudy.
Right.
You know? But they offered me the role of Mufasa, and I accepted the role, went down to Melbourne, got an apartment, then went through all the rehearsals, all of the radio stations, went around to all of the magazines, all of the news outlets, everything, you know, telling my story, you know, and they were all really surprised that a rugby player could go
right
from rugby to the stage, you know. And as crazy as it sounds, Steve, I'm walking up the stairs after the opening, you know, after all the, you know, all the fluff, all the stuff, the red carpet. I'm going down the red carpet taking pictures. I walk up the stairs, and there stands Thomas Schumacher. I mean, the guy is Disney. He's the president, VP of Disney. You know, he's smells like money. The guy, I tease him all the time. You smell like a crisp $100 bill, man.
Okay, so yeah,
he's very, very wealthy, very smart, very, very smart guy. And very good at what he does. You know, he pulls people together, he pulls projects together, and he's great. He's laughing at me, and he says, oh my God, Gino, have you heard the story? I was like, what story? The story Egil Westerdahl tells about the first day he met Gino Seegers. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, it was this day in New Zealand, and no one was suitable for any of the roles, none whatsoever. And then he heard this voice in the hall.
That's funny.
And then he started rushing through the contestants. Not you, not you, not you, not you, not you. Wow. Well, hello.
That's funny.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, man.
That's why everyone was so quick. Yeah.
Well, I thought I was trying to compete for time, and these guys were rushing to get to me. I couldn't believe it.
That's
man.
Funny.
It was unbelievable.
So you're in Mustafa in The Lion King.
Mufasa in The Lion King,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not bad with names. Yeah. I don't even know my name half the time. And so, how long does that run?
That runs for, in Australia, in Sydney, it ran for 2 years. In Melbourne, it ran for a year. Well, in China, it ran for 3 months.
You were there in China?
I was in China for 3 months.
Now, let me ask you, and you'll probably agree, a friend of mine, Tim Martin Gleason, is on the show. He played Ray Rule in Phantom of the Opera, and then he played Phantom on Broadway. He played Phantom out here in Pantages. He was the one who took the show to Vegas. And he helped. He was a technical advisor on that, and he had said, especially because of Phantom and any role in a musical, it's such a demanding part on you. That he said for him it was sort of tough because the other after the show, the crew and the other cast members would go out partying, but he's like, you couldn't because you had to be in like tip top shape the next day because you're singing. You have to bring it. I mean, what is it like as being you're hitting what, six nights a week?
I'm hitting it. In Australia, it was right about six nights a week, yeah.
Okay, so and now the show's, I mean, you're on for how long? I mean, the show's 2.5 hours, 2 hours?
2.5 hours. Mufasa has got about 30 minutes.
So yeah, what was your day like? Like, did you, was there a lot of rehearsal or no?
Well, for me, it was because Mufasa's not a bass, oddly enough. He sings baritone tenor.
Okay.
So there are notes that Mufasa has to sing every night that are really out of my range. And I'm past my range. I don't know how I'm getting this out every night, but I'm past my range. I'm singing G. You know, it's like it's way up there, you know?
Right.
And I'm singing these notes every night, and I have to every morning I wake up and warm up, I exercise, warm up, then I warm up my voice. I don't speak for, 3 hours in the morning.
Okay.
To make sure that my voice is safe. Then I hum for, 10 minutes, every morning. I have peppermint tea. I don't drink coffee. I don't drink sodas. I drink water, hydrating all the time. So it was a constant battle for me to stay hydrated and to stay warm and vocally healthy. I didn't eat a lot of spicy foods. I didn't eat a lot of lactose-laden foods, okay. Milk, creams, things like that. I didn't do a lot of things that I thought were going to be detrimental to my ability to sing because, Mufasa doesn't live very long on stage, so you really have to love him in order to
right.
to appreciate him being gone or to really lament him being gone, And your friend who played in Phantom, I've seen Phantom of the Opera. I've seen it many times. I've seen it when the Phantom was extraordinary. And I've seen it when the Phantom was very average. And when the Phantom is average, it's a show you don't want to be in. You don't want to be there.
Okay.
I don't want to be there.
Right, okay.
The Phantom has to be on.
Right.
I mean, if he's not, there's it's unforgiving. It's so unforgiving. The rest of the cast could be amazing, but if the Phantom is not on, forget it.
So you're doing this. You're doing the Broadway. Not Broadway, the show. And that's for 4 years? 4 years of your life?
Four and a half years. Because I did it here in America as well.
Okay, now, did you come at the end to America? At the end of your run? Or
that was I came with the Cheetah Tour to L.A. for the reprise of The Lion King.
And then where did that play at?
Pantages.
Okay. Yeah. So Pantages is great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So now, at this time, well, you fell into the acting. And,
yes.
But so now you're in The Lion King. Now, are you saying after this ends, I want to pursue acting, or where's your mind at?
My mind is going back to New Zealand and starting a business.
Okay.
I'd really decided that when I got back to America that eventually I was going to go back to New Zealand. And then as time went on, I saw that this could possibly be a career shift for me. And so I, at the end of the run for the Cheetah Tour, I went to New York thinking that I would go there and audition and get work, be easy.
Right.
My first audition, I got a job. Why not, But I then realized that there was a lot more to it than met the eye because in a place like New Zealand, there's very few of me.
Right.
In a place like New York, the guys are going to sing bass. Baritone, tenor,
right?
Up on again, sing and dance, and there was a lot more competition there, and so I didn't work as easily in New York because I don't look like a black guy, I don't look like a white guy, I don't look like an Asian guy.
You look like Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, like I'm Latino. Something else, mix,
right,
so
right.
It's kind of hard to put me in those places, but the roles that they wanted to put me in, I couldn't sing.
Okay.
So it was just way up into tenor, and the roles that I could sing, I didn't look like,
okay.
Joe from, Showboat, I didn't look like Joe.
Okay.
So it was kind of hard to put me in places like Emil Debeck in South Pacific. There was no way they were going to let me play Emil Debeck, but I would, Some Enchanted Evening would have been right up my alley,
So you're auditioning. It's got to get frustrating for you now.
Yeah, it was very frustrating.
Now, were you also going out for just regular acting work, or were you just doing for theater?
No, I was just doing theater, actually. Wasn't doing any acting. I was just doing theater. And, I'm going to say theater's not acting. I was just doing musical theater.
Okay.
And so I basically put my name in the hat for this show called On the Town. And they have an ensemble bass which is featured in the beginning of that show. He sings a song called I Feel That I'm Not Out of Bed Yet. I Feel Like I'm Not Out of Bed Yet. And it's like the first song of the show. And so realizing that I needed to focus on my sound as opposed to my look, I put my name in. I basically called the people that were doing the show Little Shop of Horrors and put my name in the hat for that for that the Audrey 2, the plant. And so in playing Audrey 2, I got a couple of jobs playing Audrey 2. I then, between jobs, went to New Zealand to hang out with my some family there. Went to see my old agent. They told me to put my name in for this job for this Disney show. And I was like, sure, I'll throw my name in there, no problem. So I put myself on tape, sent it in, and they loved it, and it was the role for Pair of Kings.
Now, Pair of Kings, how long has the show been on?
That show's been on for 3 years now.
Okay, now, what is your work schedule like? First of all, so what was the old, you sent it in, but what did you have to go and personally audition a few times?
Well, when I sent it in, they decided that, you know what, Gino, we'd like for you to come to L.A.
They knew of you, though, because of Lion King.
Did this business is very fractioned. I mean, the theater is theater.
Right.
TV is TV. Movies is movies. You know, animation is animation. Very rarely do they mingle. I don't know why. I don't know why you wouldn't go directly to the pool of talent from the theater.
Right.
And see if there's someone that could play the role of Mason. I don't know why they wouldn't, but they didn't. And had I not been in New Zealand at that time, I would not have gotten the breakdown for that role. Because that's the only place they sent it. They didn't send it to the East Coast.
Okay.
You know, I was on the East Coast at the time.
So you go in the audition, and yes. Then you get it right off the first audition, or is there a process?
I send in the audition, and Cheryl Levine, who was casting the role, absolutely loved my look. But, I mean, you know, they were really looking for Gino. You know, when the breakdown comes out, they tell you what they want. We want this guy. We want him to be this big.
Yeah, I always get goofy.
Yeah.
They
wanted a guy who was 100% Islander but spoke like an American. That's Gino. They wanted a guy who was intimidating but likable. Think Dwayne Johnson.
Okay.
That's Gino. They wanted a guy who was big but not fat. That's Gino. Muscular but not a bodybuilder. That's Gino.
Okay.
They wanted a guy who spoke with a commanding voice, think James Earl Jones.
Gino.
That's Gino. So it's like everything that, all the way down the list, it was undeniable. So Cheryl just really just put the round peg in the round hole, and away we went.
So you went, so now this is basically your first time shooting TV, right?
First time.
So are you nervous? Are you trepidatious? Because it's so funny, because you come from performing on stage, which is such grueling, and you have to be on, and then you come down to acting, which on TV, which is very, you sit around a lot.
You do.
So what was it like for you, and did you feel confident on camera? Because you were on stage, you never really were on camera a lot.
No, but you know what I had, what I learned in through my sporting life, and on into playing the role on ensemble and understudying Mufasa, is I learned how to trust. I learned how to trust that people doing their job are not going to put you in a position to embarrass them.
Okay.
I had to trust that I was good enough if this person was putting me forward. But if I wasn't good enough, there really was no advantage in them putting me forward.
Right, right, right.
So if they saw something in me that was going to give them a glowing review for putting me there, then why should I argue with them?
Right. Okay.
You know.
So you go on this now. It's explain the concept if the listeners haven't seen the show. Explain what the show
Pair
is about.
Pair of Kings.
First of all, how are those guys kings?
Those guys are kings.
Because the people just know I did watch it. And I only watched because I met Gino. I knew he was coming on the show. I'm not sitting around watching Disney shows. But however, I do watch iCarly because my friend wrote for it. And that's a very well-written show. And Pair of Kings was very funny, too.
Yes.
But no. How are these kids kings?
Okay.
It's driving me crazy. How are these kids? And like one's black, one's white.
Right.
And then there's that goofy kid that did he get thrown off the island? Or the little, is it, he's a Latino?
Lanny.
What, is he not a king?
He's not a king. Lanny is actually a relative to the king. Okay, the story starts. There are these two young boys growing up in Chicago.
Okay.
One is black, one is white. They are twins. Now, unbeknown to them, they are kings of an island, a mysterious island that is not on anyone's chart. Okay, so this island is magical. Okay. And this island, there are some quirks that exist there that don't exist anywhere else in the world. Okay. Because it's magical. When twins are born, they're always born opposites. You have an Asian twin and an Irish redhead freckled twin. You have a black twin, you have a white twin. You have, you know, they're always opposites. You have a twin from Africa, you have a twin from Norway. You know, so all twins are born opposites.
You know what's weird though? I have a very good friend who's half black, half Norwegian.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Maybe he's a king.
Never know.
Betty McCray, are you a king? I don't know. He might be at the Super Bowl party.
Okay.
You can ask him if he's a king.
Yeah.
His dad played for the Bears.
Wow.
But he never met his dad. His dad was African-American, played for the Bears. His mom was a Norwegian au pair, and they hooked up. And then
wow.
He never talked to his dad. His mom passed away when he was 1 and a half. He went back to Norway, but then he came back here, and he's in the sound business. He does a lot of sound for, like, American Idol. And
Yeah.
Yes, he's half black, he's half Norwegian, so he might be a king.
Wow, he may be. Never know. But, I mean, on King Cow, their parents were king and queen of King Cow. Okay. So they were heirs to the throne.
Now, what happened to their parents?
Their parents died during a calamity, a catastrophe, this huge event that took place that has not really been established. It was just
it's just
a huge event, and their parents died. And it's the same, we believe it's the same situation that killed Mason's wife. Who is the mother of Michaela?
Okay, yeah.
His daughter. So we believe, and we never heard from Lanny's parents, so we assume that Lanny's parents are also deceased.
Okay. Everyone's dead.
The parents are deceased. But now...
It's a big orphan island.
Yeah. It's part of the Disney formula.
Right.
You know, parental death. So when Mason goes to retrieve these kings... Mason believes these are the kings of legend that are going to usher King Cow back to greatness.
Okay.
So he goes to Chicago, gets the kings, brings them back, and of course they're bumbling, little stumbling, you know, snotty-nosed kids who basically can't tell their tail from their head, and they go around making all these mistakes because they don't know the protocols of the island.
Right.
They do this, they go to the dark side, they go in here, they go there, they go all these places and make all these mistakes. Mason and Michaela try to help them, guide them down the right road, where Lanny, who is heir to the throne, tries to get them to go down the wrong road so that he can have, you know, have the crown.
Now, how old are these kids in real life?
Real life, Ryan's 16. He started when he was, you know, 13.
How about a little kid? That's a little kid?
Yeah.
What's his last name?
Ochoa,
okay.
Ryan Ochoa.
Now, you're doing the show, and now, how many episodes do you shoot a year? How many episodes are
in? We shot 21 the first season, 26 the second season, and 22 the third season.
So how, you shoot one episode a week, is that what it is?
Yeah, one episode a week.
So basically, now, did you do 26 straight through, or you take a hiatus, or how does that work?
Yeah, we did three and a hiatus, you know, one hiatus every month. So okay. We like did three, one off, like that.
So now, because the show has been on 3 years, and it's a hit. I mean, a hit. Disney XD is, you know...
It's growing.
Right. And now, do you get recognized?
Yes.
Okay, now, it's weird because I had, what is his name? Michael Anthony Higgins, an actor who's in, but he's in a bunch of stuff. He's in the Ellen show, but he's on Big Time Rush.
Oh, yeah.
And he said it's weird because now, before when he's on Ellen... Adults notice him, but now his kids love it because people, all kids, like my girlfriend's nephew, loves the guy. He plays Mr. Pickles or something like that. But for you, I guess because a lot of kids, what is the demographic, would you say, of that show?
I would say anywhere between 9 and 15.
Okay, because the girl who watches it 17. I guess I would say she's a dork. She's too old.
No. But what ends up happening is... that the older siblings will watch with the younger siblings.
Okay.
So I get a lot of older kids approaching me. Hey, man, aren't you that guy? And I get a lot of parents approaching me. Oh, my kids love you. You know? And so the residual
right.
audience.
See, what stinks
is bigger than the actual audience, I think.
What stinks is, and it's not stinks because you're on a show and you're an actor and you're doing great, but what's much stink is, it's like because you're in a Disney show, there's a, not a stigma, but it's like, you know, if someone's on like an NBC sitcom, you know, you go out and people are buying you dinner, buying you drink.
Yeah.
People are like, for you, they're like, they don't want to, like, if they're with their kid, they don't want to buy you a drink because they're like, they don't want their kid to say,
yeah.
hey, look, that guy, he drinks, you know, he's such a, because you're a role model on the show.
Right,
you know,
right,
you, oh,
right.
look at him. And so, I mean, it's funny because when we talk about Twitter and you show me all your Twitter followers, oh, a lot, you really can't tweet.
I can, but I can't follow.
But you have to really, I'm guessing, is it in a con? Do you have like a morals contract?
No, I don't actually. I can tweet what I want, but I'm the founder of a motivational speaking foundation that inspires youth to make good life decisions.
Okay, so you
so were, I can't tweet.
See, it's for me because I tweet all the time.
Yeah.
And I write a lot. I do a lot of jokes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's even now because I know my niece follows me. She's 14, and I use the F word, but I always put an asterisk. I never write because I think it's I'm going to use that word. She's heard that word, but I don't want to put it. And it's just responsible. So for you, I mean, there's got to be a little. You have to really watch your behavior and stuff.
It's very, very everything I tweet about has to be something affirming or in response to. Someone tweeting me, so I reply a lot.
Do you get people tweeting kids? Is a lot of kids who follow you?
A lot of kids.
What are some of the stuff they say though? Are we liking the show, or we like your mother? What are they?
We love you in the show. I'm a big fan. Can you send me an autograph?
Do you try to respond to all of them?
I respond to all of them. A lot of them want me to follow them, but I continue to communicate to them that I can't follow.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of dangers out there for performers to follow, especially when you have a kid.
Like when you come to the Super Bowl party, I'm gonna hit you in the head, and put you up in the upstairs bathroom, and get a hooker and take a picture and send it to TMZ.
I'm gonna send
it to TMZ. And I'm gonna go.
They're not gonna want that. you know what? That might boost my career.
I know. You're like, wait a second. The kid star who gets whores.
Yeah, exactly.
He gets whores. So now, do you ever get like comics and other acts get like? Mean? Do you ever get mean tweets or no? Because your role is positive, especially kids.
No one ever tweets mean stuff. You know what I mean? And I don't think that. I don't really get that. I mean, I think that if you were like uber popular, like let's say Snooki or you know somebody like Paris Hilton or somebody,
but they're
like
idiots.
That. But I mean, every little thing they do, every little thing they say, you know, gets taken 50 different ways. You know, so. I mean, I don't think that anybody's going to mess with Mason. I mean, Mason's just a guy on TV.
Now, do you is it like the girl on It Plays Your Daughter? Do you have like a father or daughter relationship on like out or you just hang out or what's it like?
It's uncanny, man. I mean, I've treated Kelsey like my daughter since day one, and I have to remind myself that she's not my daughter.
Now, have you met her parents?
I've met her parents, and I are very close. I mean, they've come to my family reunion in South Carolina. They come and visit, and you know, it's. They're from South Carolina, I'm from North Carolina, so we understand the language. You know?
All right, yeah.
We come from the same town.
So what's next, man? I mean, how long, this show's probably going to run a few more years. I know, like, Nickelodeon runs your shows, like, 5 years.
Yeah, I think that they're looking at that five-year window to probably repeat and constantly play it. And
now, are you afraid you'll get typecast? Or?
You know, it's hard not to typecast me.
Okay.
Because I'm so specific, and I'm just hoping that my type comes out more.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're all subjected to a certain type. I mean, they wouldn't hire me to play the nerd next door. They just wouldn't. They don't, unless the nerd was Superman.
Right.
You know,
okay. Yeah.
Unless the nerd was Superman. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. I mean, I know that I can't play the geeky kid next door or the geeky adult next door. Or the uncool parent, or the balding dad with the pot belly. I can't play that guy, you know. And they tried really hard to make it funny for Mason to be, you know, to refer to Mason's weight, but no one really laughed. I mean, it's okay. I mean, I don't mind. You can say anything you want about Mason, but it's got to be to some degree funny without the laugh track, you know. What
right
I mean?
Now we about a minute and a half left. Okay. Do you is when do you start shooting again?
Pair of Kings is not going to get a fourth season, so I am open.
Oh, okay, so it didn't get renewed. Okay, absolutely. So now are you auditioning, or?
I am auditioning like mad, my friend.
For TV or for movies or commercials?
Movies, voiceover, promos, all sorts of things.
Okay, well, how can the people get in touch with you?
You can find me at Twitter, Geno Segers.
Spell it.
G-E-N-O-S-E-G-E-R-S. You can also find me at Instagram at that same title, Geno Segers, G-E-N-O-S-E-G-E-R-S. You can also find me at Geno's Fan Club on Facebook.
Well, check them out, people. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Steve.
People, just remember, every week, Cooper Talk. Also, you can listen to me in WSDI Chicago. Support that station, WSDIChicago.com. People, hit me an email, Cooper at Indie100, INDIE100. Also, my blog, CooperThought.com. I put a bunch of jokes. Follow me on Twitter, at Cooper Talk. Also, past episodes, CooperTalk.net. Also, go to iTunes or Stitcher. Type in one word, Cooper Talk. Also, you get Anderson Cooper. You don't want to get that. You want to see Steve Cooper. And so, yeah, I want to thank you for listening. Just so you know, we have some great guests coming up this year. John Cassar, great actress, coming in a few weeks. Gene Perretta, comedy legend. Working with Stephen Bauer. We have Wendy Liebman coming in a few weeks. So keep listening. You guys are great. Without you, I'd just be talking to myself, which I do every day. And I want to thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. And remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests, and it's time for me to go home.